You're listening to testimony from financial analyst Harry Markopoulos, given February 4th before the House Financial Services Subcommittee. This is Unwelcome Guests, and you're tuned to WEOS Geneva, WXXE Fenner Syracuse, 88.1 Ithaca Community Radio, Free Radio Santa Cruz, KRFP Moscow, Free Radio Olympia, KQRP Salida, WGDR Plainfield, KWMD Kasilof Anchorage, WZKW Kingsville, KOWA Olympia, WRFN Nashville, WUOW Oneonta, KRBS Oroville, WKNH Keene, Radio Veronica US, WYQZ Warrenton Bealeton, KSOW Cottage Grove, or WMRW Warren. We continue.
Mr. Rice of California.
Yes, thank you. You pointed out that pretty early by analyzing this 45-degree return on investment, the absurdity of to the SEC, besides what you brought them, the single entity custodial arrangement that existed, the one-person accounting firm, that might have been a red flag, the lack of electronic account access, certainly the firm's secrecy. I saw a piece in Investor's Business Daily, which early on, that raised this issue that has been passed around. So there was some reporting in the financial press, that the SEC didn't pick up. The critical managerial compliance positions held by Madoff and people in his family that were in that position, any number of these probably could have triggered an investigation. What's your reflection on the totality of all of this on top of your analysis that you provided some 9 years ago to the SEC, and it maybe your thoughts on why this wasn't undertaken in a more deliberative manner by the SEC in terms of the investigation?
I think the overarching answer to your question is they don't have financial professionals on the staff, and they certainly don't have financial professionals on the staff that understand complex derivative instruments of the 21st century. If you send in a team of lawyers to look at derivatives transactions, you're not going to be able to find them. You need to have the experienced finance team in there that's highly compensated, highly trained, highly incentivized to find fraud. There are no incentives at the SEC to find fraud. That's why they shy away from the big cases.
As you speak of the over-lawyering at the SEC, and you reflect back on the years in dealing with the various officials at the Securities and Exchange Commission, do you believe that the reason for the inaction was a lack of understanding of the models that you presented to them, or was it just a lack of desire to pursue this case? As you think about the personalities involved, how would you analyze that?
I think it was a mix of the two that you just described. I think they didn't understand the red flags, the 29 red flags that I handed them. They had no idea how to do the math. They were totally incapable of doing that math. They have no one on their staff, probably system-wide, that can do that math. And the other part was they're a captive regulator. Mr. Madoff was certainly one of the most powerful individuals on Wall Street. He had a respected broker-dealer arm. He traded a substantial percentage of the over-the-counter and New York Stock Exchange listed stock volume every day. And they just looked at his size and said, he's a big firm, and we don't attack big firms.
As we look at your original analysis as to what really struck you in terms of the magnitude of the fraud involved in this case, and looking at the macro level at the SEC, from your experiences over this last 9 years, what do you think needs to be changed to go after the systemic risk problem here, to make certain that in the future, if there are entities as large or frauds as deep as these, that the SEC would be guaranteed to look at them? What specific changes would you give us, or policy prescriptions right now? And I imagine that within the SEC, there have been people pushing for these types of changes for some time. But let's discuss what those would be.
I would attack it from three different areas. First, I would replace the senior staff at the SEC because they have the wrong senior staff right now. And then I would go to the bottom of the organization, and you need to change who the people on those teams are. They can't be young 20-somethings without industry experience. You need to get hired, hire senior, seasoned professionals. And the third thing you need to do is you need an office of the whistleblower to centralize these thousands of the complaints that they get so they're not handled ad hoc by 11 different regional offices. You need one centralized location, an office of the whistleblower. And you also need to compensate those whistleblowers for the risks that they're taking, because once you turn a case in, you're blacklisted from industry, and you better make it worth their while. And if you do those three things, I think we can solve this problem.
Thank you, Mr. Price.
Mr. Markopoulos, my concern is a couple of things. I mean, the Madoff situation is one thing, and it's one item. But I'm just curious. I know how I feel. I want to hear your opinion. Do you think that the problems you have encountered with this particular case are isolated to this case, or are they endemic throughout all of the regulatory structure, particularly the SEC, but not just the SEC?
The SEC is overmatched. They're too slow. They're too young. They're too undereducated.
So it's not just this case?
No, it's with all the regulators in the financial system. The Fed did an even worse job of regulating the banks than the SEC did of regulating the capital markets. Because remember, American business wants as few regulators as possible. They're paying for the regulation. They want a value-added proposition. For every dollar they spend toward regulation, they want to receive that value back, because right now, without proper regulation, there is no trust in our capital markets, which raises the cost of capital or makes it unavailable to American businesses.
That's the other thing I want to talk about. I mean, the one good thing for years, I've never thought that regulation is a swear word. I don't think you would feel that way either. However, this country over the last 20 years has considered the word regulation as some sort of swear word, and I particularly want to talk about this case. Is my understanding is that most of this money was not lost by mom and pops. Most of this money comes from relatively sophisticated investors. Is that accurate?
It is. They were high net worth individuals that received no protection from the SEC. They're considered sophisticated investors. And I would argue that they deserve protection as well.
I would agree with you. I mean, thus far, all I've heard for the last several years from the SEC and others is that sophisticated investors somehow don't need anything. It doesn't run a systemic risk. And if some multi-billionaire wants to lose $1 billion, why should we worry about it? And I think this particular case, and what this case indicates beyond it, would argue just the opposite. And I'm hoping that's something you would agree with.
Because of the people that were involved and their wealth, a lot of charities were wiped out. Medical services are not being provided today to people in the communities, community services, scholarships. People have no retirement income left. They're wiped out. So I think those wealthy people deserve protection as well.
Good. I agree with you.
To police up the capital markets, you have to increase the risk of detection of the frauds. And right now, it's such high reward, low risk to commit fraud. The markets feel green-lighted to do anything they want because they've gotten away with it for so long. And until you restore trust, the American investor isn't coming back into our markets. And worse, foreign investors won't either.
Do you think that the current, again, absent the structure of it and absent the adequacy of the individuals or the pay of the individuals, the laws relative to what's legal and what's not legal, if they were fairly interpreted, do you think the laws we have now currently adequate, or are they totally inadequate? I'm not talking about fine-tuning. I'm talking about major adequacy.
You need a lot more laws, because you're always going to be outdated as soon as you pass a new set of laws, because there'll be new financial instruments created to avoid whatever existing regulatory scheme there is. So you're always going to be behind the eight ball. So you really have to look at the securities laws as the absolute bare minimum standard that you follow. And then you have to have regulators that enforce a much higher standard, which is good ethics, full transparency, a fair dealing for all, and full disclosure. And if you do that, if you set ethics as a higher standard than the law, which it always is, then I think you have a regulator that's willing to attack bad ethics, you'll get somewhere.
Thank you very much, Ms. Kupel. Gentleman from Alabama.
Alabama. Reading your testimony and having talked to you last month and to the staff, you called the SEC, you wrote the SEC, you pled with them, you badgered them. There's four pages of contacts with them. I mean, probably over 100 attempts on your behalf to lay out a case. You had extended telephone conversations, extended meetings with them, and you laid out chapter and verse. You know, handed them on a silver platter a case. Was it incompetence? I mean, I'm amazed that they could have ignored what you gave them. Was it incompetence? Was it a conflict of interest? Was it just a lack of willingness to take Madoff on?
I think it was a combination of incompetence and an unwillingness to take on a major player like Mr. Madoff. They fear the big cases.
And you laid out regulations, laws. I mean, there were all sorts of violations.
There were turf battles. You had regional rivalries between New York and Boston. And by the way, neither New York or Boston likes Washington very much. They need to add incentive compensation, just like Wall Street. It's base salary plus incentive for what you bring in. So you're incentivized to bring in
the big cases.
In other
words, if you catch people, if your job's to catch people, you catch them.
Yes.
You're rewarded. If you don't, you're not.
Right. And what I like about that is that you, if someone tries to stop you from bringing a big case and you're incentivized to bring a big case, you'll run over them with a bulldozer if you have to get that big case in the door. And right now there's no incentive, no reward for bringing those big cases in the door.
How do you address those turf fights? How do you address sort of the sacred cows out there that they just won't take on?
I think that if you're Boston referring a case to New York, you get incentive credit for that as part of the bonus scheme for turning in a case to another region. You need to increase cooperation that way.
And I will tell you this, that you've heard the so-called pay-for-play in municipal bonds.
Yes.
Well, actually, 10 years ago, we laid out a case to the SEC on what was going on. Again, 2 years ago, we laid out a case exactly what was going on in Jefferson County. They did nothing for a year. Finally, a whistleblower came forward on something else and was caught. So, I mean, your experience, is very similar experience to some of us on the Hill have had.
Congressman, I know what happened in Birmingham, Alabama, and it happened in my hometown of Erie, Pennsylvania, the same thing with the municipal securities fraud. It happened in Massachusetts as well. The Massachusetts Turnpike Authority lost $450 million on some over-the-counter swaptions that they never understood, that they were deceived into entering in a transaction with several Wall Street investment banks, and the SEC has been nowhere to be found regulating there, enforcing action for the crimes that occurred. As a result, Massachusetts plans on doubling our tolls.
Right.
So we're going to pay for that out of our own pockets.
Right. And, that happened under the Clinton administration. It happened under the Bush administration. It was my letter was actually to the Clinton administration, but I was relying on other people. I actually had trusted them or relied on them to look at the information and tell me whether it was true or false. And they told me there wasn't anything to it, basically.
I think what you'll see is that the SEC is busy protecting the big financial predators from investors, and that's their modus operandi right now.
Mm-hmm. Well, I appreciate that. And I want to, again, just tell you how truly grateful we are to you. Unfortunately, if your warnings had been taken, and if the warnings of other people had been taken 10 and 12 years ago, there'd be literally millions of Americans that wouldn't be suffering today from losing their entire retirement. So thank you.
Mr. Sherman, California.
Thank you. I'd build on the comments of Mr. Capuano. We need you in government service, and maybe that whistleblower office needs to be established in Boston for the next 2 years. I look forward to working with my colleagues to make the changes necessary in law so that we don't have a circumstance where today Madoff is on the streets and his accountant has not even been arrested or indicted. You point out how you were able to use your professional skills in roughly 4 hours, if not 4 minutes, to convince yourself that there was probably fraud going on here. I'm a CPA by training, and I would think it would take someone who's a CPA about the same amount of time, maybe even a little less, because as I understand it, the financial statements filed by Madoff showed numbers as high as like 10 set to $17 billion. Is that right?
Yes. Let me explain. I think there's going to be two numbers that the press will start reporting. $50 billion is what Madoff has self-reported, and that was the notional amount of loss from all the investor statements combined, what they thought they had earned over many decades of investment returns with Mr. Madoff. And then there's a different number, probably a truer number. It's much lower. And that number is probably between $15 and $25 billion, which was actually cash received by Mr. Madoff.
I'm focusing on a different number, and that is if you just looked at the financial statements filed by Mr. Madoff, they would show numbers in the well over $10 billion. And then they would be attested to by the Freeling accounting firm, which had one active CPA. So the first thing anybody looking at those financial statements would have done is say, well, this is a pretty big operation, $10, $20, $17 billion. And the accounting firm isn't registered with the PCAOB. And what accounting firm is this? Oh, they have only one CPA. Now, it is physically impossible for one CPA to audit a $17 billion firm, but even if it was possible, you're supposed to be an independent auditor. Independence includes not getting more than, say, about a fifth of your revenue from any one client. So unless you think that one CPA can audit a $17 billion operation and be done in a couple of months, you've got a fraudulent financial statement in your hand. Not to mention your professional expertise focused on the fact that you cannot earn those kinds of continuously positive, even returns. I think either of our two professions could have spotted this rather quickly. Did you have a chance to bring your accusations to FINRA or the NASD?
I would have never taken them to the NASD or FINRA. I had a lot of bad experiences as an over-the-counter trader in the late 80s with the NASD. What I found them to be was a very corrupt self-regulatory organization that if you took that fraud to them, they would ignore it as soon as they received it. They were there to assist industry by avoiding stricter regulation from the SEC.
Sir, you're using some strong terms, and from anybody else, you know, we'd say, oh, that's the wild-eyed populace. But you've basically said that our two main securities regulatory agencies see their role as protecting the major institutions on Wall Street rather than protecting investors. You've talked about some circumstance where the whistleblower is compensated. Have you suggested some private right of action? In a number of other statutes, we have what we call private attorneys general, where the whistleblower doesn't just blow the whistle and hope that somebody takes action, but rather is able to bring an enforcement or civil case themselves, and if they win, do quite well. What would you think of a proposal like that?
I would be wholly in favor. As you know, the False Claims Act already gives the right of private action on behalf of the government. The SEC has Section 21AE of the 34 Act, which does provide for a whistleblower bounty, but it's only for insider trading theory cases. I'd like to see that expanded to include all financial fraud cases so that you incentivize the foxes out there in the field to come forward and bring cases against their firm with specific and credible allegations, with inside books and records, transaction reports, with smoking gun emails, and basically give the government a case on a silver platter like I did, and if the government refuses it, give them a right of private action to take it forward.
And finally, I don't think there's another $50 billion Madoff out there, but are there some in your estimation, are there some mini Madoffs and medium-sized Madoffs, and could somebody do what he did and not be as powerful as he was?
There is. I plan on turning in at least a $1 billion, if not bigger, mini Madoff to the SEC's Inspector General tomorrow. I hope this time they will actually listen to me.
Oh, I think they will.
Gentleman from Delaware, Mr. Castle.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I also thank you, Mr. Markopoulos, for your testimony here today. I have a couple of questions. One, I wasn't going to ask, but something you answered before calls me to, do you put FINRA and the NASD in the same camp of being ineffective because they are basically part of the entity that Madoff and others have come from? Or do you separate the two of them?
I would separate them. I would say that the FINRA is even less competent than the SEC. And I never thought that the SEC was corrupt. In fact, I'm living proof here today that they are not. But FINRA definitely is in bed with industry.
And the NASD you sort of condemned in your previous answer. I assume that hasn't changed.
They're more like RICO.
Do you have other ideas about either registration or other things to make all this more transparent, even though you made it very transparent to the SEC and they didn't respond? Are there ways systemically that we can make all of this more transparent to the SEC so there are no excuses as far as future activities are concerned?
Yes. One thing that Congress definitely needs to pass legislation regarding is the regulation of over-the-counter derivatives, because where there is no light and only darkness, that's where the financial criminals will tend to congregate, and you see that in the over-the-counter markets, and that goes to Congressman Baucus's remarks about lack of regulation in the municipal securities area. You can't leave those dark corners.
The accounting firm has been brought up here, and I don't know much about this, but I remember reading about it at the time, and that is that this accounting firm was apparently not of a national note, was apparently doing just about this, and seemed to have disappeared when all the trouble began. Is there something we should be doing with respect to accounting firms for large hedge funds and large security brokers?
I would like to think that there is, but when I looked at the Greenwich Century financial statements, they had a big four accounting firm, PricewaterhouseCoopers in the Netherlands and PricewaterhouseCoopers in Toronto, Canada, as their auditor, and they didn't spot it either. All they saw was treasury bills of those year-end financial statements, which are in book entry form. There were no securities positions in the inventory for the auditors to actually inspect. And as we all know, Mr. Madoff self-custodied. So one thing you could do is make sure that there's independent custodians, and I think that would go a long way toward solving this problem.
Thank you very much. The gentlelady from West Virginia, Mrs. Capito.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Let me ask you this. Did you make your hue and cry, did you make them aware, the fund managers and other folks who were investing with Madoff, of your suspicions, and what was their reaction to you at the time? Did you become sort of on Wall Street where you were questioned, or did people look into this more deeply with you?
If you look at who the victims were not, that you would have expected to see but did not see as victims, in New York and certainly in Boston's financial district, I was warning the firms where I had close relationships, where the people were competent and understood financial mathematics and derivative securities, and those people all stayed away. They were big investment banks here in the U.S. They were big consulting firms. They were big private client offices. They were big fund of funds, and they all avoided Mr. Madoff because they knew me, and I warned them.
In our notes it has that, and I might be pronouncing this incorrectly, Acacia LLC put out a statement the day that Mr. Madoff was arrested that they would no longer recommend the Madoff feeder funds. So obviously this net had been cast pretty wide. People will become very suspicious. What was the precipitating event to cause them to, was it people calling in their money and not finding satisfaction, evasion by Mr. Madoff? What was, in your book, happened that caused them to change their mind and others right at the time that it became public?
Before. When this became public, anybody that had anything to do with Mr. Madoff went into hiding. And you could ask people that were at the feeder fund staffs what their dealings with Mr. Madoff were, and they would run for the hills. No one wants to answer to the victims from the feeder funds. I think they feel that they'll be answering in court very soon.
Mm-hmm. Thank you very much. The next member is Ms. McCarthy of New York.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman, and thank you, Mr. Markopoulos.
One of the problems we're obviously going to be facing for the probably a very long future is the confidence in the American public, whether it's in banking, whether it's in the financial institutions, obviously even in government, mainly because everything has failed. So with that, if you have any ideas on how we build that trust up, I know you have offered some suggestions, but one other thing, too. With the SEC not responding to you, and you had mentioned the Attorney General of New York and then Massachusetts obviously bringing charges forward, did the New York Attorney General, did you think about going to them, or even the FBI, being that it was a criminal offense?
Yes, I didn't think I could go to the FBI after being rejected multiple times by the SEC, because with the FBI, I'd have to make full disclosure. And if I told them I gave this to the SEC multiple times, and the SEC did nothing to investigate, then I would have zero credibility with the FBI. They would automatically assume, and be wrong, but they would assume that the SEC was competent when it was not. As far as the New York Attorney General, I actually did make an attempt to contact him. Mr. Elliot Spitzer was at the JFK Library a number of years ago. I went there with a package, with my submission to the SEC, and I knew through the grapevine that he was a big hedge fund investor through his family trust, and I figured the odds were high that he was a Madoff investor, which turned out to be the case. And to the staff of the JFK Library, I handed a packet, and I made copies such that my fingerprints were never on that package. I handled it only with gloves because I thought that he was an investor, and it turned out to be, I think the New York Times reported that he was. So I did go there. And I don't know that he saw the envelope. I don't know that. I never saw him receive it. So I don't know what happened.
When you were working with the SEC, and you had mentioned earlier in your testimony that only a few knew your name, obviously because you didn't want your name out there, do you think that might have hurt with the SEC not responding to you?
No. Boston knew who I was. You know, I was the past president of the 5,000-member Boston Security Analyst Society. They knew my qualifications and derivatives. I managed billions of these as a chief investment officer at a very well-regarded firm in Boston. So that definitely wasn't it. Boston vouched for me every step of the way.
Well, with that being said, couldn't they have taken your case and pushed it a little bit more, even if they didn't have a good relationship with the New York or the Washington offices?
Not really. In fact, I made an offer to the SEC in my October 2001 submission. If you read it closely, you'll see I offered to go undercover for the SEC under their command and control and have no one know where I was, except my wife, and I would have no contact with my family during this time. I would have assumed a disguise, as I was trained to in the Army, and gone undercover and led that team to a successful result very quickly. I don't know what more I could do to put it on the line and bring this man to justice than I attempted to do in my October 2001 submission.
I think what makes me nervous is obviously you never gave up on this, and there's probably many other people out there that are watching this testimony and saying, well, I know something, but what's the sense of me going forward if no one's going to pay any attention to me, especially when you tried so many different avenues. I thank you for your service. I'm sorry that through the government failed you when everybody else failed you.
The gentleman from Texas, Mr. Neugebauer. Gentleman from Massachusetts, Mr. Lynch.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I want to thank the ranking member as well. Harry, thank you very much for coming forward and for your great work on that, and above all, for your persistence. Having been rejected so many times, I'm sure it must have been frustrating. I also want to thank you for the power of your example. I know in my office we've received contacts from a number of former SEC employees and current SEC employees to raise a number of concerns similar in respect to what you've said here this morning. I think, first of all, the former SEC chairman, Harvey Pitt, had written an article, an editorial, I believe, entitled Over-Lawyered at the SEC. So I'm not giving up his confidence in saying that he, early on, pointed to the same deficiency in not having enough economists and accountants in play to be able to just analyze a lot of the data that was coming in and recognizing the problems. So that's a structural need. Another structural need that you mentioned in passing with respect to the gentleman from Delaware's questions, a number of people that I have questioned at the SEC about the inability to discover this early on, they said that the way that Mr. Madoff had this structured was somewhat unusual in that he was executing the trades, but that he was also his own custodian bank. He didn't use State Street or another third-party custodial bank, as many of the legitimate firms do. Do you see a need there? Is there a way that we can put a tripwire in if we separate that custodial responsibility versus the trading responsibility? Would that allow us to at least compare or to have the SEC go in there and compare the books of both entities?
Yes, you need separate custodians. They can't be one and the same organization, which was one of the big ways that he hid this fraud for so long. But the SEC had enough. Even with Mr. Madoff being self-custody, all they had to do was go into his operation, take the roadmap I gave them, take those 29 red flags, and say, let me talk to your derivatives trading staff. And they would not have found one single derivatives trader there, because the key mark of a Ponzi scheme is there is no underlying product or service. It's all a fraud. There's nothing underneath it. The emperor wears no clothes.
Right.
The other thing they could have done was go to the Chicago Board Options Exchange, where there's OEX Standard & Poor's 100 index options actually traded, and talk to the people trading them. Have you ever received an order from Mr. Madoff? And they would have told you he was a fraud.
I was told that senior SEC management had actually gone to a financial services industry conference, and basically said to the firms out there, if you feel that you're being too aggressively investigated, then I want you to call this office. And that was a senior person, two senior people at the SEC. And I know that that these employees took that message as meaning, you know, we've got to back off a little bit, and that the senior management at the SEC was actually captured by the industry, and that it wasn't doing the intense investigating that we would expect from them. Have you run into that dynamic with the people of the SEC that you've been dealing with?
Yes, I did. In fact, I brought with me the Association of Certified Fraud Examiners 2008 report to the nation, and it lists in here that the best way to find fraud, 54% of the frauds get discovered by tips, whistleblower tips, only 4% by external auditors, which the SEC is an external auditor. Therefore, whistleblower tips are 13 times more effective than external auditing. So why wouldn't we want the SEC to be 13 times more effective? Lord knows this agency needs to be more effective.
Right. It just struck me that there was a hotline to stop an investigation or to slow it down at the SEC, but there wasn't one to speed it up or initiated. It just seemed counterintuitive to me, given the mission of the agency itself. Again, my time is short, run out actually. I want to thank you again for your willingness to come here and help this committee with its work. Thank you.
Thank you.
I yield back.
Thank you very much. The gentleman from Illinois, Mr. Manzul.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Mr. Markopoulos, could you draw any parallels between what happened in Madoff's case and those with the hedge fund operator Arthur Nadell?
There are parallels with every Ponzi scheme, and the SEC, you would have thought, would know these, but apparently they do not. They do not have the experienced staff at the junior levels, and they're even worse off at the senior levels. One of the things about a Ponzi scheme is it's a cash-eating monster. It has a voracious appetite for cash. You need new cash to pay off the existing old investors. So that's there for every Ponzi scheme. The other thing is the numbers are always too good to be true, and the SEC has so little investment management experience that they don't know what the industry standards for good performance are and what the industry standard for unbelievable fraudulent performance are. Because the SEC already has jurisdiction over Ponzi schemes. If there is fraud out there, it doesn't matter if you're registered or unregistered, the SEC has the authority to attack it. They just don't have the ability or the willingness.
In the Nadal case, he was disbarred as an attorney from the New York bar. And there's some thought that if the investor into his hedge funds had had some knowledge of that, that obviously that could have been a deterrent. Is in the registration that that takes place presently, would that type of character flaw or legal issue come up in the registration that a person had been disbarred?
Oh, certainly in the SEC form ADV, if you're a registered investment advisor, you would make disclosure there. But I don't know how you're going to get these people to register if they're running a hidden Ponzi scheme. I think these people aren't going to go on the map. I think they're going to remain hidden below the surface or underneath the rocks. So I don't know that registration is the end-all and be-all. You certainly want them to register, and if they're not registered and the SEC receives a tip on them, well, that's a glaring red flag that fraud is taking place here. So it's an immediate red flag to the SEC that there's something here. They're not registered. We're getting a complaint about someone who's not registered, and they can go in expecting to find fraud, and chances are they will find it. So I just think it's a great idea to make them register.
I have a last question. That is, you obviously brought this to the attention of the SEC. Do you have any idea how many other funds, characters have been brought to the attention of the SEC? Is it in the tens, the hundreds, the thousands?
I just know that you saw the example of my work that I turned in. I have seen several examples just like that of at least as high a quality that were turned into the SEC by people who have come to me asking for advice how to go to the SEC because they knew that I was going to the SEC, and they submitted their complaints to the SEC that were at least as good as mine, and the SEC never bothered to pick up the phone or even show up to investigate. So this is common and systemic. They ignore the big cases.
Thank you.
Thank you very much, Mr. Manzullo. Now, Mr. Perlmutter of Colorado.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And Mr. Markopoulos, thank you for your testimony today and your persistence in this. And I really appreciate sort of the forensic approach you took to this, you know. But I got to make a statement because you talked about it. It starts at the top down. And I want to take a shot at my friends on the other side of the aisle. When you vilify people who are regulating the system so that taxpayers don't have to pick up the pieces or that the depositors of a bank don't have to pick up the pieces or shareholders don't have to pick up the pieces, but you vilify those regulators and you make them out to be the bad guys in the system, then they become the bad guys in the system. So there are philosophical differences between my side of the aisle and the need for regulation so that the taxpayer doesn't pick up all the pieces when everything goes to hell, and wanting to keep the markets completely free so that the guy can make the last obscene buck. So that's my statement for the record. Now, let's just talk about a couple things. I think you're right on the money with young people, inexperienced, ultimately wanting to go into the business, you know, to go to investment bankers, et cetera, being the regulators in the first place. They're going to be nervous, and you're right about, you know, picking some people who've seen this stuff before. This is not rocket science, finding a Ponzi scheme. You found it in 4 hours, and I know you were looking for it. But when it is too good to be true, then you stop and you take a breath and say, what's going on here? My questions are, you went to the media, and you had stories written about this. You have supposedly sophisticated investment fund managers who are investing into this. What happened with them? Why didn't they see this?
I think one big reason is the feeder funds were preying on the people that they were close to. Ponzi schemes are above all an affinity fraud. We saw that in the United States, where Mr. Madoff was Jewish. He preyed on the Jewish community. But that's all he did here. Overseas, he used different connections, and he actually took royal families to the cleaners, European aristocracy and high-born families, and the nouveau riche. So I think the losses in Europe will actually be bigger than they are here in the U.S., but they're going to be more hidden because a lot of that money invested from overseas was untaxed money in offshore jurisdictions, and they can't admit the losses or else their host nation authorities will come and investigate them. So there are reasons for this failure.
But shouldn't – here's my question. I mean, you were looking for this. I think – you know, I look at your timeline, your chart here, which is very good. And you were asked by Rampart Investment to try to figure out what this, you know, split strike strategy, which in my opinion is a bunch of baloney. You know, it's like the black box that everybody uses for a Ponzi scheme. But you were asked, and you discovered this. Shouldn't those investment managers have seen something that just didn't smell right?
But they were paid so much to look the other way. Let me explain the fee scheme in the Madoff Ponzi.
Please. Thank you.
Mr. Madoff was purporting to only be taking commissions from this product, even though he was a hedge fund manager who usually would take a 1% management fee and 20% of the profits. He was so generous of a human being that he was offering those fees to the feeder funds to lure in new victims. And so let me explain the fee structure to you. To deliver 12% annual returns, he needed to be earning 16% gross because there were 4% in fees. And he was passing the 4% in fees along to the feeder funds and keeping only a smidgen for himself. And so those feeder funds were incentivized not to ask the questions, to be willfully blind, if you will, and not get too intrusive into the Madoff scheme.
Okay, what happened? You know, I noticed in December of 2005 you went to the Wall Street Journal. What happened? Did they publish anything about this? It says you went to, I start to doubt, New York SEC and contact WSJ. I assume that's the Wall Street Journal, Washington Bureau.
I did go to them, and I lost confidence quickly in the New York regional SECs to conduct this investigation. I lost it very quickly. It just took a couple of weeks to lose confidence in them. I could see how bumbling they were. And I was worried about my safety because the New York branch chief and the team leader knew my name. And if they were corrupt, I thought I was a dead man. And so to protect myself, I went to the Wall Street Journal's Washington Bureau. And that reporter, who was very senior and very good, was ready to come on a plane to Boston several times in 2006, 2007, but I believe that senior editors at that publication respected and feared Mr. Madoff, and they never let him get on the plane, no matter how much he wanted to get on that plane.
Thank you for your testimony. Thank you for your service on this.
Thank you, Mr. Perlmutter. Mr. Donnelly of Indiana.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Mr. Markopoulos, thank you for being here. You talked about respect and fear of Mr. Madoff, and in reading your document about the world's largest hedge fund is a fraud, you mentioned some pretty prominent financial organizations that basically said, oh, we don't touch this guy. We know it's a fraud. Do you know if any of those organizations also contacted the SEC with their concerns, in effect, putting more weight behind what you were saying?
I am not privy to all the complaints that the SEC received, so I can't answer that question from their perspective. But I believe that I was the only one to investigate and do the math proofs. And my team were the only ones out there closely tracking Mr. Madoff every step of the way and building a voluminous volume of information against Mr. Madoff. So I think my team was the only one out there tracking him, and we feared for our lives if he discovered that we were tracking him.
And these very prominent Wall Street organizations that said, hey, Madoff's a fraud, we stay away. Was it, in effect, a club-like atmosphere where, well, we're not going to say anything about Bernie because, you know, that might come back on our business? Was that atmosphere rife throughout the people you were dealing with?
In Wall Street, there's the code of silence. And when you live in a glass house, you do not throw stones.
And with that code of silence, that's with the very same people that the American people are looking to trust, because they're giving every dollar of retirement savings or the funds they've accumulated working hard every day at the shop that they've been placing their trust in.
If it's misplaced trust in fraudsters, especially the white-collar variety, these people are much more dangerous than any bank robber or armed robber, because these people, the white-collar fraudsters, are the most prestigious citizens. They live in the biggest and best houses and have the most impressive resumes. So when they commit a fraud scheme, they destroy companies and they throw thousands of people out of work, and they destroy confidence in the American system such that capital becomes unavailable at any price, or it raises the price of capital. We cannot afford to not find white-collar criminals out and punish them severely.
And is there... You mentioned that so many of the companies knew Bernie's a fraud. Bernie Madoff's a fraud. Is there also, even today, within these organizations, like a list of other companies that they look at and say, we stay away from these guys. It doesn't smell right. It's not working right. Is there a whole group that people are staying away from at this time?
Yes, there are, and they don't come forward. There could be many reasons, but I think the main reason is if you're committing fraud yourself, you're not going to tell on somebody else's fraud scheme for fear somebody will do the same to you. And so they remain silent. There is a code of silence. They know who these people are, the fraudsters are. They need to start coming forward. Otherwise, our nation's system of finance falls apart, and investors will stay away, and businesses won't have access to capital.
So one of the things the SEC, it would be beneficial to do is find out who else the organizations that are that there are concerns about out there and go through their books and find out how they're running their businesses and find out who has red flags out there.
But right now there are no incentives for the SEC. Right now the SEC exists to protect financial predatory organizations from investors. That seems to be their mission statement, and we need to change the whole focus, and the only way you can do that is to offer incentives to the staff such that anybody gets in their way when they go after a fraud scheme for whatever reason, they run them over with a bulldozer because they've got their own bonus on the line and they want their bonus.
Well, we asked the Inspector General of the SEC when he was here, or the question I asked him was, how many red flags do you need before it sets off an alarm with a particular organization that you send the examiners in? And he said it should only be one. And in the Madoff case, in your document, I think you were in the 20s on red flags, but certainly just in that testimony we had four or five. And so they should, the SEC, have a list of organizations that there are red flags that they can look at to make sure that investors, that Americans who are working hard every day can have confidence again.
That is true. They have both an inability to find fraud, and they lack the willingness to attack fraud, and that needs to change. And I think the only way you're going to change that is change the tone at the top, and you need to replace the senior staff of the SEC, because right now the junior rank and file out in those regional offices has lost confidence in their senior staff.
Mr. Markopoulos, thank you very much for your time, and Mr. Chairman, thank you for having this hearing.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Now the gentlelady from California, Ms. Spear.
You spoke about not using your name, handing over documents with gloves on. That's a bit of paranoia, one might say. And I want to know why you had that concern and if you suffered any recriminations.
I don't consider it paranoia. And the reason is Mr. Madoff was running such a large scheme of unimaginable size and complexity. And he had a lot of dirty money. And let me describe dirty money to you. When you're that big and that secretive, you're going to attract a lot of organized crime money, and which we now know came from the Russian mob and the Latin American drug cartels. And when you are zeroing out mobsters, you have a lot to fear. And he could not afford to get caught, because once he was caught, and once he knew, if he would have known my name and he knew that he had a team tracking him, I didn't think I was long for this world.
All right. In your testimony, you referenced Ms. Chung in New York as the branch chief. And you say, she never grasped any of the concepts in my report, nor was she ambitious enough or courteous enough to ask questions of me. Her arrogance was highly unprofessional given my understanding of her responsibilities and mandates. When I questioned whether she understood the proof, she dismissed me by telling me that she handled the multi-billion dollar Adelphi case. I then replied that Adelphi was a mere few billion dollar accounting fraud and that Madoff was a much more complex derivative fraud that would easily be several times the size of Adelphi. She never expressed even the slightest interest in asking me questions. She told me that she had my report and that if needed more information, she would call me. She should be fired.
She already left the agency, but otherwise I would agree. It's too late.
You referenced that you thought there needed to be house cleaning. And yet there are people, by your own reference, in the New York Attorney General's office and in the Massachusetts Security Division that are doing great work. Mm-hmm. So it's not a lack of talent out there. It's a lack of really identifying the talent and bringing them in. Wouldn't you say that?
I would agree, and I would urge the Congress to consider the fine examples set by the New York Attorney General's Office and the Massachusetts Securities Division. They give great regulation on the big cases that are nationwide fraud cases, and they get full restitution to the victims. They are aggressive, but they're small. They don't do a lot of examinations. All they do is take in whistleblower tips and act upon them and act vigorously. They're pit bulls against financial fraudsters. And here we have a pipsqueak of a flea in the SEC. So it's not the size of the dog. It's the size of the fight in the dog. And that's why I commend those two state regulators. They're very aggressive. And if the SEC does not reform itself, you have an option. Just disband the SEC, zero out their budget, put all 3,500 of those people on the streets because they're not protecting us right now, and just fund the New York Attorney General's Office and the Massachusetts Security Division.
My time is about to expire, so let me ask you one final question. Fairfield, Greenwich, and Tremont, sophisticated investors, and yet they did not do their due diligence. Should we be going after them as well? Should someone be going after them because they ripped off the American people?
I would say that they need to be looked into. If they didn't know, they were willfully blind. And they got paid a lot of money to be willfully blind.
Since I have opportunity for one more question, there was a reference made to the attorney in the SEC who later married Mr. Madoff's niece. Do you know any more about that?
I'm not privy to the SEC's investigation.
Thank you.
Gentleman from Ohio, Mr. Wilson.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Thank you, Mr. Markopoulos, for coming forward today and for what you've done to this point to point out the greed and what's really going on. It always amazes me in America that we can lock up a single mother for stealing a can of spaghetti sauce at the convenience store, but we allow this kind of stuff to go on. It's just hard to understand. Auditing, which I would think is one of the things that primary would focus when there's wrong things being done. Could it be a random assigned auditors rather than the same old that they have every time?
I would rotate the teams, personally. You want a fresh set of eyes looking at the books, but you want a fresh set of trained eyes, and right now those eyes are not trained. They're also not trained in human intelligence gathering. When they come in to inspect a firm, they are led to a conference room. They meet the compliance staff, and they're fed controlled pieces of paper. That's what they do. They inspect pieces of paper because they're too untrained to realize what to look for on the financial end. All they're looking for is the pieces of paper. If they see the pieces of paper, you're going to get a fine audit report back from the SEC. What they need to be doing is talking to the portfolio managers, to the traders, to the marketing people, the client service officers, the information technology people, and they need to be interacting with them and saying, is there any fraud here? Is there anything illegal or unethical happening here? And if you get a no answer, say, okay, fine, thank you. Is there any fraud anywhere else in any other organization that your firm deals with or that you know about? And then you hand them your business card and say, if there is, if you ever discover fraud, please let me know. And hand them the card. And I think if you do that, you'll increase audit effectiveness. The SEC staff are afraid to ask those questions because they fear the answer would be yes, there is fraud.
That's tough. What about the bounty hunter situation that's been mentioned? Is there any kind of a way to look to try to get a grip on this thing, to get a handle on it?
If you incentivize private parties that work at these firms that are committing fraud, and you incentivize them enough, they will come forward with the books and records that solve the case quickly, easily, at low or no expense to the government. They would be your best source.
The gentleman from Florida, Mr. Grayson.
Now, I understand that in 2005 you wrote a letter regarding this scheme, and the title of the letter, as I understand it, was "The World's Largest Hedge Fund is a Fraud." Is that correct?
It is.
Could you have possibly been more explicit?
I even drew pictures, so I don't know how I could have been more explicit. I gave them a roadmap and a flashlight to find the fraud, and they didn't go where I told them to go. Or ask the questions that I told them to ask, or call the people that I told them to call.
Who did you address that letter to?
I initially sent it to the SEC regional office in Boston, to Mr. Ed Mannion. He put me in touch with Mike Garrity, an SEC branch chief in Boston, who actually believed me, knew my credentials, vouched for me. He investigated on his own, found several irregularities, and he said, there's something here. I'm going to put you in touch with that New York regional office. And he did. But they refused to follow up.
Now, the year before you sent that letter in 2004, I understand the SEC convened a session, and a gentleman made this statement at that session regarding what he proposed, the deregulation of Wall Street firms. He said, "You really have to start with the assumption that most of us in this industry really have our clients' interests coming first." Do you know who made that statement?
No.
Mr. Madoff made that statement. Are you familiar with the concept of capture when you're talking about regulation? What is that? Do you know that concept?
Yes. It's basically when the regulator is in bed with the industry, they purport to regulate and do not regulate the industry. In fact, they consider the industry the clients, not the public citizens.
And have you seen that in action?
Yes, at the Food and Drug Administration and at the SEC.
The gentleman from Illinois, Mr. Foster.
Yeah, let's see. You had mentioned that actually you're blacklisted from industry if you bring forth one of these cases. Are there more specifics that you can give us on that or examples where that's happened?
Yes, myself. I've crossed the Rubicon. I can never go back.
Are you aware of other similar cases where people are basically, not allowed to participate or informally blacklisted?
Yes, many. I'm a chartered financial analyst. I'm a certified fraud examiner. I have an undergraduate degree in business administration from Loyola College of Baltimore, Maryland. I have a master in science and finance degree from Boston College. I used to manage billions and billions of dollars in equity derivatives and trade these securities as a chief investment officer for a rather mid-sized firm in Boston. I have a military background. I served this nation for 17 years as an officer. My last 7 years were in Army Special Operations, where my unit that I commanded had teams overseas. This was a reserve unit. This was part-time. I had people overseas 24/7 every day of the year serving this nation.
Now, we've had a non-member of the committee waiting for an awful long time, Mr. Arcuri.
Mr. Markopoulos, thank you very much for what you've done. I think many people look at the Madoff scandal and they think that it's just the wealthy and the sophisticated investors that have been hit by this. But I'm here today to talk a little bit about some of the other people that have been hit by it. And I just want to mention a few of the groups, the bricklayers, Allied Craft Workers, the International Union of Operating Engineers, the United Association of Journeymen, United Association, group of journeymen, Local 267, 73, and 112 of New York, the Carpenters Local, 747 out of Syracuse, and the United Union of Roofers. All of these groups are from upstate New York. They were hit for pension and health care benefits between $300 and $400 million. These are not very wealthy people. These are hardworking people who have lost not only their health care benefits, but also their entire retirement. And they've been a long line outside of my office door, and I think I can speak for my colleague, Mr. Maffei, outside of his door as well, as we both represent upstate New York. But obviously, my concern is this. Many of these investors are not the very sophisticated investors. They manage small pension funds. They're small boys. What can the small investors do to keep an eye out for the sharks that are out there like Mr. Madoff?
I'm afraid that they may be on their own unless they hire consultants and trust those consultants and hire only competent consultants, because clearly the SEC is not out there guarding the henhouse.
You've been listening to excerpts from a hearing held February 4th before the House Financial Services Subcommittee, featuring the testimony of Harry Markopoulos, a financial analyst and whistleblower.